Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Media pundits say outlets like TikTok and Instagram have distilled ideas into their purest and shortest form, a 30-second clip best viewed on a smartphone. This, they say, is our future. But not everything is shrinking. Some films are growing, lengthening, and expanding. Would you believe I just saw an 8.5-hour movie, and I loved it? It's a film diary whose 7 chapters are shown in 2 parts. This philosophical travelogue and life record follows its filmmaker over half a decade in Canada, New Mexico, Cuba, and Switzerland. It deals with images of animals and nature and caves, rivers and waterfall, alongside a personal examination of life and death, the past and the future. The film is called While the Green Grass Grows and is written, directed, and photographed by award-winning Swiss-Canadian filmmaker Peter Mettler. Peter Mettler's retrospectives featuring Gambling Gods and LSD and Picture of Light, among others, have been shown at the Lincoln Center, the Jeu de Paume, and Cinémathèque Suisse, while his his cinematography can be seen in movies like Robert Lepage's Tectonic Plates and Jennifer Batchelor's Manufactured Landscapes. With a distinct cinematic style that lies somewhere between experimental film and documentary, Peter explores the physical world and the ideas we carry within our minds. It's having its world premiere at TIFF in September, and I'm very pleased to have Peter Mettler here with me via Zoom to tell us more about While the Green Grass Grows. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Daniel.
Thanks so much for your monumental movie and for meeting with me.
Yeah, thanks for your eloquent introduction.
So, is Greengrass a single film or a series of films?
Well, it's a diary. And, I mean, diaries have entries. And diaries reflect the unfolding experience of the diary writer. And the film's structured in 7 parts. And that came, the delineations were decided by the flow of life, really, and they create a sense of chapters. Some of them are much longer, you know, and like I think one's 1.5 hours and another one is 40 minutes. It's not following a format, if you will, of regular series programming.
Would you say the film's narrative just occurred like by nature, or was it teased out or sculpted later in the editing stage?
Both. You know, my intention in going out at the beginning was to really, first of all, I followed water. It's one of the things I've done in other films, too, that when you don't know where to go, follow the water. It'll always take you somewhere interesting, whether it's inside the human body or outer space or, you know, water is an amazing element to explore existence on Earth, I suppose. So I basically started the project by looking out my window where I was living in Switzerland and following the water that was melting off the hills into the Rhine River. And at the same time, meeting people along the way. And so the first people you see are directly, they're my neighbors, basically. And then I wanted the course of my life to determine what would be filmed. And a lot of things happened, as you saw, and COVID was part of it. The death of my father was part of it. Teaching in the Cuban film school was part of it. My own episode, my brush with mortality was documented when I went into a hospital, etc. And we Jordan Kawhi and myself, who was co-editing, we created a chronology. And the first step was to look at the whole thing chronologically, and then start whittling it down and see what themes were dominating, I guess, or were coming through. And then instead of working narratively, although narrative was an issue, of course, we paid a lot of attention to associative thinking, so that things that you would see down the line would refer back to things you'd already seen thematically or by subject. And I think those are the things that define one's life also. Like, they define our own personal idea of ourselves and our own narratives. Anyway, that's a long answer.
Yes, oh no, you raised up so many things. So first let's talk about the hospital. At one point in the movie you say you always have your camera with you. You never take it out of your hands. Everywhere you go, you're always carrying this camera. I want to know, like, you're in the hospital, you were struck by a case of vertigo, and were those encounters with the doctors and stuff, were those refilmed to get what you wanted, or were those actually you're like in hospital in emergency holding your camera? I'm just curious over how you did that.
It was my iPhone, in fact.
So it was really being filmed while they were saying all this.
Absolutely, yeah. And
Wow.
it was a special case. What I went through was mysterious to them, and so they wanted to document me. So the one quite funny scene where there's the two doctors like looking at me really closely with their camera, I said, "Okay, if you're filming me, can I film you?" And so we were filming each other. For obvious different reasons.
Another thing you mentioned about the role water and rivers play a central role in the film. One image really struck me is I think it was in part two or part three. At the top of a waterfall, it's the water is splashing up and the sunlight's coming through, and it looks like molten glass or something like that. I don't know if you know the shot I'm talking about, but it was so beautiful. I could watch just that for like half an hour. You had the camera there for a while, but it was just so exquisite. So, could you talk more about the role of running water? Because in much of the movie, you look for the origin of it in different countries. So, what is the reason for looking for the origin and the destination of water?
Well, like I mentioned at the beginning, water takes the path of least resistance in terms of the kind of water that flows, at least. If it's steam, it's rising. And I mean, it's a different set of physics, but the water that is running around the earth and forming lakes and rivers is really making its way through the path of least resistance. And I like to, in this film, to give myself over to that flow, as opposed to having a theory that I want to demonstrate or articulate. I want the theories to emerge from the things that are being discovered along the way. It's a methodology, and it's also something that takes kind of the human hand or the human ego out of the equation a little bit. I mean, of course, I'm still there. I'm still a medium, holding a camera and reacting. And there's a personality behind that. There's choices being made, but it's a little less than me, imposing a script, imposing a thesis. That's the main rationale for working like that, and see where it takes me, see what it offers.
You also mentioned the chronology of the film, of the different parts, but as you said, sometimes it's not exactly chronological. One scene that really struck me was in your father's home, there's a wall where a painting and maybe a clock, some wooden thing, used to hang, and it's just the shadow of it. But then the next scene, they're back again. So talk about how you, not fooled around, but how you envisioned chronology within the film.
Well, there's a kind of psychological play of memory and anticipation, I suppose. The image you're talking about is actually looking into the future for it's just a flash of looking into what happens to this house.
It's very foreboding, yeah.
It's a bit foreboding, yeah. And it's during COVID time. It's during a COVID scene. And it's just a brief intimation of, at that point in the film, what could be, and then later in the film, it is in fact what happened. But in part six, which is where my father passes away, the sort of tenses of the film start to really flow back and forth into the past and into memory. Even there's a shot of me in the home, looking down the stairwell, and my father, who's already passed away, turns up in the stairwell and walks up, and we have Thanksgiving pie. And then it goes into kind of interior space, of things that could be imagined, that are more impressionistic. And you really dissolve the tenses, and it becomes a place of memory, imagination, and non-linearity, I guess.
And after your father died, you had to go through his things and you found your own footage from many, many years ago. You found Super 8 film from when you were a kid or like a student. But what you found was certain images like flying birds, boats on water, are almost identical to scenes that appear in this film. What does that mean? What did that tell you?
Well, what happened was it was footage that I had in my own basement
Oh, your own basement. Okay.
during COVID. One of the things many of us did, I guess, was rummage around in our basements. And I was at the same time making the film. So when I came across certain footage, I started looking at it, and it became part of this project. And what I immediately saw, and I actually say it in the voiceover of the film, is that this is proof that we're always making the same film over and over again. Because my very first Super 8 film that I made in high school was where it was about where the character has he buys from a gypsy on the street the dream of death by inhaling smoke out of a bottle. And so he has that experience. And here we are, many years later, making a film about life and death again, and mortality, and the cycles of nature and transformation. And a lot of the visual signatures were already there when I was 16 years old, I guess.
Well, I can't cut off a conversation about an 8.5 hour movie after just 15 minutes, but I'm going to pause now and finish this on the radio, and people can hear the rest of this conversation on my website. So for now, thanks very much, Peter Mettler, for making this film, and it'll be continued online.
Good. Thank you.
This is Daniel Garber, the movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.